Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. This episode is sponsored by my free masterclass, Online Marketing for Translators and Interpreters, where you can learn how to transform your website and online presence on social media into client-generating machines. It looks like networking with clients at conferences and events will still not be possible for quite a while. This means that we all need to rely on connecting with clients online. There is no better time than now to review your online presence and make sure you are attracting your ideal clients. That's why I want to offer this free training in online marketing for translators and interpreters. During this training, you will learn how to optimize your website and social media online to attract clients to you. You will identify who you want to attract to your online platforms. You will learn strategies and tips for your website design and optimization, so search engine optimization. Learn how to leverage social media to attract your ideal clients. And you will get tips and tools to analyze your online marketing and see if it's really working. You can get instant access to this training at marketingtipsfortranslators.com/online-marketing. I can't wait to help you market your services online. So go to marketingtipsfortranslators.com/online-marketing. See you there. Hi there. Welcome to the Marketing Tips for Translators podcast. I hope you're doing well. Today and during some upcoming episodes this summer, I will do reruns of some older podcast episodes that you might have missed. The content will most likely be very relevant for you right now. We will talk about added client value on websites, how to use website to market your services, how to become more productive, how to best apply to translation agencies, and much more. As always, I would love to hear any feedback or questions you might have. So let's get started. Hello and welcome again to Marketing Tips for Translators, the audio blog with marketing tips for freelance translators. I am so glad you are here and listening. You have probably before heard about marketing personas or customer avatars. But what are they really and how can we use them in our marketing, in marketing our translation services? That is what we're going to discuss today. With me, I have an English, German, and Spanish into Italian freelance translator and copywriter. She's also a speaker and a trainer. She is a progressive rock fan and a true linguist in that she keeps a journal where she collects words worth saying, which are terms that have become old-fashioned but that she likes to keep alive in her own vocabulary. Welcome to the podcast, Alessandra Martelli.
Thank you, Tess, and thank you for having me here.
It's a pleasure having you. Can you give an example of an old-fashioned word that you have recorded in your journal?
Yeah, but they are all Italian.
They are all Italian, okay.
Yeah, but one is desueto, which means old-fashioned in itself. Uh-huh. And it has become an old-fashioned word. So one okay. of those old-fashioned words. So I think we have lots of words that have now been replaced with more plain or more simple or more English most of the times, but we do have correspondence in our language, and since languages also tell the history of country, it's good to keep them alive, know where they come from, and try to to stick to them when we can, of course, when it makes sense.
I subscribe to a blog where they announce new words every week in the Swedish language. So I'm sort of the opposite. I subscribe to new words.
Well, new words are also very important. But it's, you know, you have to keep both sides alive, in my opinion.
Of course, yes. So tell us first a little bit about yourself and your translation career.
Okay. I'm 34 at the moment. And I live in Turin, which is in northern Italy. In my professional life, I can say it all started back in 2002. And at the time, the World Wide Web was not so wide. So I mainly started working with local companies who needed help with translation or copywriting. And they mostly did it internally back then. So it was.
So do you have a translation as an education?
No.
As a degree?
I studied business and languages and philosophy.
Okay.
Of those translators who have a different career, but I ended up in languages after studying them in high school and after, and I never gave up with them. They were really my thing. So I decided to go down the path, and it wasn't really common at the moment, and because most companies had their internal translators or people in-house who could also translate, but they actually needed some help occasionally. So I started with that locally, and word of mouth did help a lot to make it take off and fail. Yeah.
And how did you contact the local companies then?
Well, knocking at their doors.
Okay.
Not in person, but maybe I sent a letter or I phoned them. Where I live, we have an old tradition of family-run businesses. One of the things they have, and they still have it today, is that they won't do business with you unless they can see you in the flesh and meet you before. So the best way for me was to actually contact them, see if I could go for a short meeting or just pass by and drop a brochure or something. And then they also helped by spreading the word. And then when I implemented online presence, but my first encounter with a freelancing translation was with a in-person meeting.
And what did you translate then? Did you translate their brochures or financial information or?
No, I do specialize in marketing and advertising and tourism and travel, also including arts and history, etc. That were my first specialization back then. So I basically help them with their communication, be it internally, so business correspondence, or their brochures, their leaflets, or I also did some copywriting project for business presentations in meetings or conferences, all kind of marketing communication in the broader sense. Also in the older sense, I do remember translating some faxes back then, which I don't do anymore because they don't use them anymore. But And then after a few years, I introduced the third specialty, which was medicine and healthcare, which is the but my core roots lie in marketing and advertising mainly.
Okay. And do you still work with local companies?
Yes, I do. Some of them have been with me since day one. Other companies, working with direct clients is a bit different, because, you know, sometimes they call you and then you don't hear about them for 6 months, but keep coming back. local companies, especially when they know you, they also refer you to other people or so. So it's a circle that once it kicks in, it's really different it's very difficult to come out of it because you are kept in the loop by them. So.
So do you only work with direct clients now?
No, I also work for a few translation agencies, mainly specializing in my fields of expertise. But I'd say direct clients constitute around 40 to 50% of my customer base.
Okay. Good. I found you through your blog. You have a very interesting blog with marketing pills for freelance translators. And one of the we are going to put a link to this blog in the show notes too. One of the things you talk about there is how to develop marketing personas to help with marketing our services. Can you explain what a marketing persona is?
Yeah, I'll try to keep it short. Marketing personas are profiles which wrap up all the important information you need to know about your customers and prospects. And with this, I mean it is mostly used in the field of copywriting. You see that a lot because you have the target audience profile. So a marketing persona is a fictional character that impersonates in a way a niche of the global target audience. Information collected in a marketing persona profile include both job-specific information, as an example, in our case, it could be their budget, their project volumes, what kind of languages they use, and etc., but also general information about the customer behavior in general.
I think the buzzword for marketing personas in the United States is customer avatars.
Yeah, I hear them a lot from U.S. companies. We use personas, which is more British sense, but they also call it customer profiles very plainly without going for the fancy word, you know. But the idea basically is to break down your target audience into smaller groups with similar characteristics to get an understanding of what might or might not click with them when doing marketing activities. And this smaller group of the broader audience is then pictured into a persona, so it's easier to focus on them. Some companies even give names to marketing personas, so you might find in a copywriting brief the persona of Mick the manager or Rose the retailer, and they like giving this assonating name. But the idea is basically to narrow down who you want to target so that you can speak to them rather than speak to an undefined audience.
And you become more personal then, right?
Yeah.
In your communication. And so that might answer the question why we should have marketing personas or customer avatars.
Yes, definitely, because it helps crafting marketing materials that sells to that niche, to that audience. All customers are different. We say it all the time. And this is also true when they process marketing stimuli they receive. Some might be more keen on humor, as an example. Some people might be more keen on facts and figures. So if you find a way to understand who your customer is and what clicks with them, then you can craft your marketing messages accordingly. And that's probably the most important benefit of having marketing personas.
But now I can hear some critics saying, but aren't we limiting ourselves then and shutting some of our customers out if we create a specific persona?
Well, what I think, yes, that's true in a sense, because you limit your vision, but considering freelance marketing, I mean, we are our own boss, our own accountancy, our own bureaucracy department, etc. So we have limited time to work actively on our marketing. I personally have 3 or 4 marketing personas, and when I craft a new marketing brochure or kind of promotional messages, I tend to craft even slightly different, because they don't have to be rocket science different. But if you find as an example that goes well with one and an example that goes well with the other, then you can fit those personalized, personalized messages within a template or something, because it improves them dramatically, even if it's just a small difference, but it's a difference that makes a difference in the conversion of the product into a customer.
So it pays off, I believe. I think the advantages are bigger than the disadvantages.
Well, one of the disadvantages we have, and we as freelancers in general, is that we usually don't have the budget and the time to go into defined market research.
Yes.
Which is bad, and also limits your ability to develop then crafted messages, which is what we're talking about. But we can have this information easily by looking at our existing customer base, because we know the clients we're already working on, so we can try and analyze our relationship with them and keep them. And yes, it's a bit of work narrowing down what a customer wants and needs is tricky. I'm not saying it's easy, because it's not, but it definitely pays off. Also, because you learn to see the customer as a customer. Oh, you kind of learn how to filter out the person-specific characteristics by looking at the broader pictures and see that, as an example, that customer of yours is very budget sensitive. Another customer of yours, on the other end, is more quality oriented or more keen on using own glossaries, or rather someone who can let you do your thing and say, oh, whatever you prefer. These are all different characteristics, but basically, customer behavior can be narrowed down to a defined number of groups. That's it.
I think, so that we can get a better picture, can you give an example of one of your marketing personas that you use for your clients?
Sure. I don't give names to marketing personas, but of my typical customers, as an example, which is kind of a persona, is a solopreneur or family-run business owner. It's in his 40s to 50s, so it is he or she is in that kind of moment for a business to transition from the old way of doing things to the new, because they're maybe digital natives, whilst the previous owners were not, etc. So it's in a state of transition. They want to bring their business to another level, to open up to new possibilities offered by technology, by the internet, by online advertisement, etc. They are usually conscious that this requires a budget in terms of money, but also in terms of time, because it can take quite some time to catch up the spirit of a company in a copywriting assignment.
Okay.
And usually they also need translation as well. So a kind of contextual project, because they want to have their website online in Italian and into English. They usually are very understanding when it comes to delays, but they do want you to do things right in the first place. So it can take you maybe 20 days instead of 10 days to come up with an idea that clicks, but they don't like being given too many possibilities, and they don't like it to be discussed and then rediscussed and then adjusted.
Okay.
Other things that would fit the profile would be their location.
Uh-huh.
So they are based in northern Italy, and they usually work in the business-to-customer sector. So they are not services companies, but rather product companies, manufacturers, or small farms, or small tile manufacturing, etc. So they do business-to-consumer rather than business-to-business.
Okay. Do you know if this persona is a he or a she?
I'd say it's a he.
Okay.
And
just curious.
My persona is a he.
Okay.
I've learned that in that specific persona, they are mainly males in their 40s to 50s.
Mm-hmm. So how do you use this persona?
Okay. Lots of ways, actually. I do use it for not this specific persona, but I use marketing personas to create content for my blogs, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my customers are more keen on linguistics, while some of my customers are more keen on marketing and advertising or business communication. In fact, I do have two blogs. One in Italian and one into English, and they do not include the same kind of content. My Italian blog is more focused on language and linguistics and business communication, because I mainly get copywriting clients from Italy. My English blog, on the other end, has the marketing fields, as you mentioned, kindly. Which are not only for freelance translators, but for freelancers in general.
Okay.
And include marketing concepts, not in terms of promotion, but rather what's behind the scenes. So also promotion, but what runs in a business, what you have to do, the business plan, the SWOT analysis, etc. Get lots of customers who work in the marketing and advertising business. So they also see, I don't know about translation only, but I know about what they do for their customers, because these kind of customers are all usually in the business-to-business field. So it's kind of diversification, and it works. So you can use marketing personas to create content for your blog, or select content for the social media. As an example, I know you're on Twitter. Lots of people are on Twitter, but somebody shares and posts everything and anything, including also things that might hurt their business in a way, because a customer, in my opinion, doesn't really need to know that you're in the gym at 5 p.m., you know. When you are on social media for business, you need to find a way to hook your prospect to come to you. So you select content for one persona, as an example, an article on what you need to do to go international with your business. That would attract readers that are interested in that kind of content.
Mm.
On the other hand, medical companies might be more keen on changes in the EMA template or the regulations concerning the translation of medical documents.
Mm.
You can kind of drive your content marketing efforts towards that niche, towards the possibility of getting context and starting a conversation with a prospect.
Mm. Do you use a marketing persona? Do you talk to the marketing persona on your website?
On my website, considering my business pages, my professional pages, yes, I crafted a marketing persona for that.
Mm.
In my blogs, I like to talk to people.
Mm.
But, mm-hmm. you know, it's different. I didn't talk to the persona in a sense that I said, okay, Mick the manager, now sit down and let's talk to you. But I did have a clear vision of who I wanted to approach.
Yes.
So, by the way, the website is in redesign right now, and I just finished crafting the new copy because I changed my focus in my business. It's a time of changes and revolutions for my business, so I need
exciting.
To adapt. Yes, it's exciting, but uh-huh. I also, one of the duties was also to adapt my new copy to who I want to talk to now.
Mm. So
that's it.
Well, I look forward to seeing the result.
Well, hopefully you like it.
Let me know when it's up.
Yeah, should be up at the end of next week or so, but you really can't promise when being a freelancer, you know. I'll let you know anyway.
Okay.
And
so, sorry.
Sorry, no. Another way I really want to point out on how to use marketing personas for our marketing is that they help you spot opportunities to meet prospects in the real world.
Mm.
And this is really underrated sometimes. But meeting people is basically one of the vital steps of marketing. Because
yes.
you meet a person, you make contact, and those people might not need you, but might know someone who can or whatever. And things move on. And they move on fast if you are in a live environment.
Mm.
So you can use your marketing persona as an example to select the events you want to go to, shows or conferences as an example. If I want to make contacts with medical translation clients, I'm not going to a general conference, but rather to a medical conference as an example.
Mm.
Or I can go and attend the symposium, which is held in my city, if I have a chance to.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be translation event. You have to go where the customer is.
Mm.
So this is also very helpful to narrow down what they might be interested into, because that's where you will find them.
Yes, yes. Very good. That's a very good reason to have a persona, because then you can know where to start looking for events where they go.
Yeah, that really pays off. So I believe even in 2014, it is important to be where the customer is, not only online, because everybody can be online. But being there where they are, when they can talk to you and see who you are in the flesh, is also important, especially when selling services, which are intangible.
Mm.
At least you make yourself, which is part of the package, you know, more tangible and real for them.
Yes. Okay, so we know what they are and how to use them. And why we should have them. How do we develop a persona? You, in your blog, you were talking about 7 key questions to ask when we are developing them? What are these questions?
Yeah, the number of questions can, of course, vary. I've seen in other industries, in other contexts, 20 questions, 25 questions, 30 questions, but breaking it down to the freelance work. And basically in an industry when most of the marketing goes on online, then you can look and narrow them down to at least 7. Then if you want to go further, you can always add your personal questions. What is important for you? To me, as an example, it is important to know what kind of communication the customer had already done in terms of marketing. So when I want to pitch a customer, I always go to their website. I try to collect their brochures. I try to look in the press if there is something for them about them or so. Well, that's one of the things I do, but maybe not anybody would be interested in that. But for me, being a copywriter, it is also very important to understand what kind of style and tone of voice they had before. So if you have to take it on, I need to start from there. So you can't go really too distant or so. That's very important for me. Actually, marketing personas are a tip I grabbed from my copywriting experience. So it's easier for me to give you examples, refer to that, but it works for translation. I mean, and when a customer calls in and asks me for a quote, I can see what their communication has been looked like, and I can say, yeah, I can do, you know, I think I can do better than that. So you can keep what they already have as a benchmark to decide what you can highlight for your
team.
That's it.
Mm.
So coming to the questions.
Yes.
First thing, I'd say, what is the role of this persona? Let's call it Mike.
Uh-huh.
Mike's role. Is he
In the company, you mean? Or?
Yes.
Mm?
Yes. Who is this customer as a business person? So
okay.
Is he a project manager, or is he a small business owner? These kind of things make a difference because, you know, translation agencies, and as an example, are really attuned to our own jargon. But direct customers aren't. So I can't go to Mike, the business owner, and talk about CAD tools. That would make no difference to him. So it's just a void message, a message that doesn't convey any value to him. On the other end, if I talk to Mike, the project manager, the fact that I can use 3 or 4 different CAD tools actually makes a difference. The first thing I'd say, what is Mike's role? The second is, of course, what services does Mike ask for?
Okay.
So, do they need translation? Do they need proofreading? And if they do need proofreading, who is doing their translation?
Yes.
Yeah. Narrowing down what kind of services they use more often may also open up to new opportunities for to develop a niche product that suits Mike's needs. Third, and very important, is how does Mike make his purchase decision? And this is directly connected with number one, so what is his role? But what are the drivers for buying?
They
need something quick and dirty because they have to fix a huge mistake? Or are they looking for something more quality and consistency oriented because they're translating their whole website, so they want to make sure everything is right in place? So also, what are the barriers? Are they very budget oriented, or are they very time? Do they have any time constraints? So they always ask you for quick things, or are they rather the kind of people who plan in advance for a translation? Also, who makes the decision when it comes to paying your bill? Which is important to know, because if you talk directly to a business owner, he is the one in charge. But if you talk to a company, then they have an accountancy department, and maybe they have a budget and planning department. Your quote doesn't really end up with Mike, but Mike needs to pass it on to an office that needs to pass it on to an office. So you also need to take into account that not people that will actually receive that will be Mike. Fourth, what kind of objections do they usually raise?
Okay.
So do they have, there are there any common patterns in term of industry knowledge which can make a customer more difficult or more easy to, to work with? If they think they know a lot, they might try to overrun you in a way when it comes to the translation decision, which is your job, not theirs. Also, what kind of project specific patients they usually ask for. If you can handle only a limited number of file types, as an example, but they need something, that would be an objection. And that would be a barrier to buying your services because you can't fit their requirements. So the objections they use is very helpful when it comes to backing up your pitch with discussion and negotiation.
Okay.
Fifth, what are the elements of your products or services Mike actually values? Some companies might value attention to the own glossary, as an example, because they already have an history of branding in terms of communication. Other people might be, as I said before, more keen on a person that is very independent, that doesn't like to be asked or to ask many questions. Do they value your questions? Do they value your being a nitpicker? Or do they value you being fast, no matter what? These are also requirements that differ in our industry, and each marketing persona can be seen as a niche in itself, not in terms of fields of expertise, maybe, but as a field of customer type. They do value different things. And so it's good to know where their interest goes because that's where you need to be, basically. Another very important question to ask is, what are the uses of your product of or service within the company? You need to translate them for internal use only. Do you need to put it online? Because then you have to pay attention to web writing rules as well. Do you need, does Mike need your brochure to sell it to a small number of local companies? Or is he rather setting up a nationwide campaign? Because that would also have adapt translation or copy to the language they speak in the area or in the industry or whatever. So what are the uses? What will your copy be doing when it's done and ready to go off to the world?
Okay.
And the seventh, which might be a bit more tricky for translation buyers to use, really neat is that what are their interests outside the work, outside the office, and what are their lifestyles like?
Okay. See, this is what I am used to, questions for marketing personas. How old are they? Do they have a family? What are their interests? And stuff to know who it is. So,
yeah, I won't go in our specific industry as far as do they have kids.
No.
It really depends on the use you're doing for the marketing persona. As an example, in copywriting assignments, you get a 3 or 4 page marketing persona sometimes. And then you have age, level of scholarship, etc. I think we don't need to go that far. But
true.
Knowing that they are very dynamic people, as an example, generally speaking, they are people who maybe like to go out for sports or like to hike or whatever, help us decide what tone of voice we need to take. If you use a lot of action words and as an example, this might click with Mike the hiking lover, might not click with Mike the knitting lover, as an example. Because I know I'm not good at examples in a language that is not my own, but you get the idea.
I am sure there's a Mike that loves to knit too.
Well, the world is big, so probably it is. But,
yes,
you know, when a person is very conservative or likes very traditional things, then you can't be too dynamic and revolutionary in your communication.
True.
Because otherwise they will feel a sense of distance from you. And if they can find someone who is more solid and traditional and maybe a bit less keen on humor than it is, then they will think of him or her as a more serious person, even if it's not the case, but it's just good communication that clicks for a Mike the hiking lover or Mike the knitting lover.
Good. Yes, yes. So let's recap the 7 questions. One was what the role was in the company.
Yes.
And 2 was what services the persona usually ask for.
Yeah.
3 is how do they make their purchase decision, and are they the person that makes the purchase decision?
Yes.
4 was what kind of objections do they usually have?
Correct.
5 was the what elements of your product or service the person value the most? 6 was how they use the product or service, if it's internal or external communication, and where they use it to, yeah. Right? And 7 is what hobbies or interests they have, what kind of personality they have outside of work.
Yeah.
Good, very good. That's I really like these questions. They're very relevant.
Thank you.
Let me finish this interview with a question that I ask of all the interviewees. Can you share a marketing strategy that works well for you right now when you market your translation services?
Yeah. As I mentioned before, in service marketing, I believe it is extremely important to make the intangible a bit more visible and solid, especially in languages with a very tough competition, such as European languages. And we need to find a way to stand out from the crowd, but in the good way. The way tells them this is the right person for us. So one of the tools I use to do this, and it had a very huge impact in my conversion rate, so to say, to give prospects the opportunity to see what I do and how I do it with a portfolio.
Okay.
Because you back up the nice talk and the marketing blurb, so to say.
Yes.
With something that's solid, they can see. They can see the level of your language, for me being Italian as an example, but they can see that your Italian is flowing and fluent and that you can write well and not only translate technical jargon well, as an example. And I also make sure to have a couple of references they can look online because it's quicker for them to click on a website link rather than to go through two pages of samples from other companies. The trick here is to create a targeted portfolio. So when I pitch a medical translation company, I do take excerpts from medical translation, of course. I don't send the long, 12 pages long general portfolio because it's boring and nobody reads boring things.
Okay. I have two questions.
Yeah.
In your portfolio then, how long is the excerpt usually?
Yeah, it's usually no more than 2,050 words.
Okay. And is it both, do you have it in only your target language then, or do you have the source language with it?
Source and target.
Okay.
Yeah. That's okay. Something that works because then you can, again, back up your marketing messages with something they can touch and feel and see how good it is. And it really had, I would say, a 30% increase in the conversion from prospect to customers when it comes to quotes.
And do you send it out with your first contact then?
No, I don't. Because I don't like overwhelming people with information they didn't ask for, basically.
Okay.
So I pitch and say, if you're interested, if you want to learn more about me, just you can ask me, you can ask for my portfolio or you can look on my website, LinkedIn profile, first profiles, whenever I do have content. But I always offer them to see the portfolio. And surprisingly, lots of people ask for it.
Okay.
So that's a strategy that works, for me at least.
That's a very good tip and a new one too.
Thank you.
So okay. I want to thank you very much for your tips, Alessandra, and we have a better idea of marketing personas now and how to create them. I also want to thank all you for listening and for all of you who are sharing the podcast and writing reviews. Now we can go into our office. You might be out running or in the gym right now, and polish. We can go down and to the office and polish a little bit our marketing personas. I will put links and show notes on www.marketingtipsfortranslators.com. Links to Alessandra's blog, and also she is having a marketing course on prose.com starting
It's a marketing translation course, and it's on Alexandria.
Oh, on Alexandria, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's three sessions, and the first one starts September 18th, right?
Yeah, correct.
So I will also put a link to this in the show notes.
Thank you.
So thank you, Alessandra, and thank you all for listening. Remember, you can also go and post comments and questions under the show notes. I wish you all a wonderful week. Thank you.
Hi there, this is Tess. Before we get into this week's episode, a short message about a new course. Is this you?
You finally, or unfortunately, have some time to work on your business and website, but you don't know where to start. You know that you can make your website, your social media profiles, especially your LinkedIn profile, and your online content better to get it to show up higher in the search results and attract ideal clients to you so that you can hit the ground running once the economy has recovered. If so, I would like to invite you to my new mini course opening in May, complete with a guest teacher who is an expert on LinkedIn marketing. The course is called Inbound Marketing for Freelance Translators and Interpreters, How to Transform Your Website and Online Presence into Client-Generating Machines. There's no better time than now to review your online presence and make sure that you are attracting your ideal clients. That's why I wanted to offer you this course right now. I have guided over 200 students through this content in live or online workshops, and now I'm updating it and making it available as an online course that you can go through at your own pace and when it works for you. This course doesn't only cover an optimized website and its content or an optimized LinkedIn profile. It also covers all your online presence and how to use inbound marketing and content marketing to attract your ideal clients. Go to marketingtipsfortranslators.com/inbound-marketing for more information and to sign up. I will also put a link to this in the show notes. Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.